Let's freaking go. We have two guests lined up for you tonight. Mr. AYS will be with us here in a second. John Eads is here to let us know everything you need to know about LSU baseball, basketball, football, and everything else under the sun. Your biggest hot take overreaction over what happened between LSU and Texas A&M over the weekend is? Or is there an overreaction?
I don't know. I think the overreaction is the fans that overreact to everything and like think the sky is falling still, when in reality, they lost two games. They moved up in the RPI from 9 to 8. They moved down one spot in the polls, depending on which one you look at, from 2 to 3. So I don't really have a hot take. I guess my take would be, like, who cares? Because they have Arkansas left, and then they have South Carolina. And the magic number going into last weekend in terms of getting a top 8 seed, how many wins you had to have to close things out, not including Grambling, which isn't even happening, obviously, was 4 or 5, and they got 1. So you have 6 games left. Can you win 4 of them? That's very doable. Home series against Arkansas, great team, but you pull at home. And then South Carolina, Paul Mainieri storyline, obviously, but they have 5 SEC wins. They don't look good at all. Maybe a take you could have is you're concerned about the offense. The offense might prevent this team from making it to Omaha. That might be a take. But I wouldn't go there personally. So I don't know if I have a hot take, to be honest with you. And that's not even – what I just said is not a hot take at all, because that's kind of like a medium take. That's like a take you would have if you were level-headed and understand the bigger picture.
You know what's weird? I saw this, you know, tweet from earlier that the game that got canceled versus Grambling tonight would have lowered their RPI if they actually played the game.
It's true. Yeah.
So you're the expert. Explain – that's just – mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, it's because it hurts your strength of schedule, because Grambling's like 250 plus in RPI, you know, so you lose points, RPI points. They would have lost 5, if I saw correctly, had they played this game and won. So you get hurt for even playing this game and winning. If they lost, they would lose like 72 RPI points, which is a massive number. Probably wouldn't happen, but crazier things have happened in the world of sports. So it's weird, but that's how it works with baseball, and it's really out of their control, because LSU plays against like every other D1 baseball team in the state throughout the year. You know, play Grambling for years. It's not like this is football where they're like, yeah, we're just going to put who should catch us straight today? I don't know. Yeah, we're just going to put Central Arkansas. Sorry about Arkansas. We're going to put Central Arkansas on the schedule, and it'll be a cupcake win. It doesn't work like that in baseball. Like, LSU just plays the in-state teams every single year, and Grambling just so happens to be the team that they're playing in their final midweek game of the season. So it's terrible outside here in BR. It'd be nice for LSU to play this game, because you have a big series coming up, and some guys need to get some innings on the mound, and some guys need to get right offensively, and those are usually opportunities to, you know, get your swing back and go out, throw some strikes, get some confidence. So they lose that opportunity, but – you know, your RPI stays the same. Now you get a little extra rest. So, whatever, you know.
You're an athletic guy. So, give us your technical analysis as to why the bats aren't batting right now.
I don't know if it's technical. I think it's more of, what would the word be? Mechanical? I think I was a little concerned, confused by the lineup construction this weekend. Like, they had Steven Milam in the 8 spot, if I remember correctly, in the first game. And he's been hitting 4th or 5th all year. Not to mention he's a switch hitter. And A&M threw 3 lefties. Like, all their starting pitchers were left-handed. So, in my opinion, you'd want a guy that can bat right-handed and well. Like, Milam hits very well both sides of the plate, higher in the lineup. Because there were so many times where they would get a single here, a single there, a single, a walk, and then they wouldn't do anything with it because the person they had in the 4 or 5 spot would strike out or not get on base. If Milam's up there, and he had a great series, by the way, he's something for a while. I thought this would be a good bounce back spot for him. It was. Same with Luis Hernandez, their catcher. You want him higher in the lineup. So obviously Jay Johnson forgets a lot more about baseball than I'm ever going to learn, but that's just kind of my 2 cents, the way I see it. Then not to mention they had John Pearson, young freshman from West Monroe, Josh's little brother. start his first career game in the second game of the doubleheader, which was interesting. And they had Jared Jones leading off after Derek Curry had done it all year. So I don't know if it's as much a, you know, athleticism swing problem as much as it is the lineup. And tip your cap to A&M. The three starters they had out there, Ryan Prager has been great for years. Justin Lampkin's been a really good start, probably their best starter this year. And then Miles Patton, their game three guy, is really good too. So really good pitching on the other side.
We do not say nice things about A&M.
I'm just being objective.
I understand you're Mr. Objective Journalist.
I wasn't being nice. I was just saying the facts. You know?
No, you're right. And look, I feel for A&M because they were the victim of the snakiest snake move in the history of snake moves.
Ah, yes.
With Schlossnagel,
yeah.
Leaving them at the altar. You know, it's fascinating to me from your vantage point. So you're objective. You and let people know where you're from originally again, John.
Michigan.
Okay.
Between Detroit and Ann Arbor. So I grew up a Wolverine fan.
So this is what's interesting. You have no ties whatsoever to Louisiana. Do you think that LSU fans are more visceral and hot takey when it comes to baseball or when it comes to football?
I feel like it's a crossover between the two because a lot of the baseball fans are the football fans, and sometimes the football fans dip their toe into the baseball. But down here, you got to be a baseball fan if you're a football fan. Like it's just such a great program, you know, and it's years of tradition. It's not like other places. Like I never watched a Michigan baseball. Maybe I went to one in the 20 years I grew up there. Like we don't care about baseball up there. Down here, like you got to love both teams the way I see it. And I don't really want to call out LSU fans because every fan base has their spectrum of fans. You got say some outlandish stuff that belongs on message boards and then on Message Board Genius on X, Twitter. And then you got your fans down the middle that are, you know, coherent, understand situations, aren't very hot takey, you know. And then you have your fans that just, like, do not really care at all and will cheer on no matter what and just, like, complete fanboys, fangirls. And everybody's allowed to have their own opinion and find their spot on that spectrum. But I don't know. You do see some things, though, and Blake certainly talks about them a lot, like the fire Jay Johnson stuff and comparing him to Coach O. And some of it's just insane. But sometimes it's fair. It's fair criticism, you know? So it's kind of just about who you're following on social media. And sometimes things just pop up. They get suggested. And, so you know how social media is. I wouldn't call out LSU fans, though. But I will say they care a lot, and I appreciate that because not a lot of people do in a lot of places like they do here. So,
all right. So explain this to me. All right. I love LSU baseball. I do. I'll say I'm a semi-casual because I don't
watch
every pitch of every game like you do or our upcoming guests or a lot of my viewers do. I'm always open. I don't want to fake knowledge or whatever. But I don't disagree with a lot of the things that Jay Johnson does, okay? But the Zach Cowan thing, was like a big thing. Like, everybody was going nuts over that decision to bring him in. So what was your reaction to that?
Same thing last year. Like, when they were in the regional championship at North Carolina, and they went into the ninth inning with a lead, and he brought in Gage Jump. There Friday, you were there?
No, I wasn't there, but I
remember. Oh, you saw it. I was going to say I was there too. Damn, we should have linked up. But
I would have loved to have been there. Yeah,
likewise, I've seen you there. Yes,
yeah,
it was electric. But people were questioning that decision, why they brought in Gage to throw and get the last three outs. If you would have told anybody that before the game that your ace would be closing out the game, you would take that because 9 out of 10 times, he's going to close out the game and you win because that's just what your ace does. And that was the same kind of situation at A&M. That, like, direct reminder right there to when I was there and experienced that. You're going to put Zach Cowan in the game. He's been your guy all year. He's contributed to so many wins this season. He's been, outside of Cason Evans, and maybe better than Cason Evans in some respects, your most dominant arm out of the bullpen. those two are 1A and 1B, so you can have that debate if you want. No, you put him in there. And Jay said that after the game, and Koki Riley's story on The Advocate, that like he reminds him of a reliever he had in the past. Like, he's the guy. Like, we're going to put him in. Zero regrets about that decision. And I completely agree. Like, the first game, you're putting him in to go get outs. And A&M is the first team that's really been able to figure him out. I don't want to say figure him out. I think we asked Mikey Matuk on the Jordy Colada show his 2 cents on the Zach Callen thing. And I said figure it out, and he didn't seem to like that phrasing, so I'm not going to say figure it out. A&M just seemed to be on his stuff. Like, he would leave the changeup hanging. His command was a little bit off, and, the Aggies made him pay. So I don't think there should be any regrets at all about putting Zach Callen in, because most of the time, especially this year, he's missed bats and he's been dominant for you.
Yeah.
And A&M got a little lucky too, I will say. Think about the last game. It was bottom of the eighth, two outs. Connor Ware comes in, their lefty, to get a lefty-on-lefty matchup against Jace Laviolette, one of A&M's great hitters. Wasn't great this weekend, but he got like a super soft contact bunt single, they call it, to Michael Braswell. Most of the time, that's an out. But he happened to beat out the throw. Then the inning continued, and that's when A&M had the singles and the three-run homer. So a little bit of luck was involved with that. But Zach Callen has been lights out all year. He was due for, you know, a bad appearance at some point. So you hope that was it. But I don't think there should be anybody questioning that decision. If he's available and he's got pitches he can throw and he's rested, yeah, you put him in the game. Absolutely. I think people were like, why didn't you leave Chase Shores in, because he was pitching so well out of the bullpen? To which I say, he did pitch well, but the consistency hasn't been there. And I'm taking Callen over Shores every day of the week. No disrespect.
Yeah, no. This would be the only thing that I would say to Jay Johnson. Now, I say this. When I criticize a coach publicly, which I do pretty often in the football side of things, I want to be able to tell that coach to his face my criticism, okay? It could be Barry freaking Bonds, who comes out of nowhere in an LSU uniform, and Charlie Baker of the NCAA tells Jay Johnson, hey, Barry is eligible to play for you right now. You can pinch hit Barry Bonds right now.
Yeah.
I would still not do it if the guy who's coming to the plate had hit a home run earlier in the game. Okay. So is it true? Let me make sure I wasn't, seeing things that Jay Johnson took Hernandez out, who had hit a home run earlier in the game. Is that true?
He did. I guess, and this went over my head until I listened to some shows after the game and really looked at it closely, because I was in the middle of typing up my show and all that stuff. I think that he took him out for Tanner Reeves because it was a matchup thing. They had a righty on the mound. He wanted a lefty bat, and Reeves has some pop. And he lives and dies by that. Like, you could hit three home runs in the same game, and he probably would still put the lefty in for the lefty righty matchup, or vice versa.
I can't. Dude,
I understand
it. And look, once again, I might have just been seeing things. I think that's what I saw. And
I'm pretty sure you're correct. I went back and it says in the live stats, Reeves in for Hernandez.
I don't think I can remember a coach doing that. Unless I am just off my skis. If someone hit a home run earlier in the day, I am leaving his ass in. It could be freaking Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani at my disposal, or Griffey or whoever. Tim Raines. I mean, we can get down into the weeds here. I can't get behind that. That would be the only thing I would say to Jay Johnson, but I understand he's also a very forward thinking coach. He's a process coach, and I love process coaches over result oriented coaches. So like you said, he probably still would have done the same thing. It's just something I disagree with, but that's, the beauty of this channel.
Yeah, I understand it. And Hernandez almost had two home runs, but he just loves to pinch hit and get the lefties in when there's a righty, or there's a righty on the mound, he wants a lefty. And it's worked. Like Dalton Beck, Tanner Reeves walked when LSU had that walk-off win against Tennessee. Like, it works. It has this year. So I can understand that. And He probably could too, but I'm sure he has a logical answer as to why he did that. So,
dude, I love Jay Johnson. He's literally one of my most favorite coaches.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I would like him as much as I've enjoyed him. And it's not just because he's won a natty. I love how in every interview, how he publicly does, he's recruiting while he's also doing the interview. I mean, the dude is always thinking about the next thing, and I love that. Before we let you go, John, is there anything football-related? Obviously, the A.J. Halsey thing went down. But outside of that, your overall vibes with LSU football over the past couple of weeks is what?
I'm pretty excited, honestly. I think they've got a good team. Seems just a little bit different this year. And, when you got a quarterback, you got a chance. Like, it's like the NFL. If you don't have a quarterback, you're toast. But Nussmeier's back. He played well last year. I think that we could agree. Maybe Blake would disagree a little bit with that. I don't know. He's coming in here soon, so you guys can get into that for, like, the 50th time, I bet. But when you got a quarterback, you got a chance. And they have a quarterback. And now it's been about putting the pieces around him. I think the Halsey pickup was good. It's a little interesting, though, kind of the mentality there. You're picking up a guy like that at the end of spring. I guess that means they didn't feel set with what they had between Jarden Gilbert and Tamarcus Cooley and Javian Toviano and Deshaun Spears. So that was kind of interesting. I don't know if it was a case of this guy is so good, the fact that he's available, we got to go get him, or shoot, I don't like how the guys looked in the spring at safety. We need to go get somebody. So time will tell with that, I think, a little bit. Maybe a little bit of both can be true there. But I think the only thing they really need to figure out between now and the fall, there's some other things too, little things, but I think it's offensive line. I think that's the biggest question.
Yes.
You brought in transfers. Are they everything they were said to be? Are they worth every penny that you paid them? Are they going to take those starting jobs? And you got to be ready to go game one. Like, I wonder if this coaching staff has learned lessons over the past 3-4 years about the decisions they've made with the depth chart week one. Like, they keep scheduling these big games right off the jump. There's no week zero. There's no exhibition. There's no preseason. Like, you need to have your best 11 at the current moment out there game one. And I just hope that they've taken some things from USC and from Florida State and said, hey, you know, maybe we should lean on experience here. Or I don't know what, like, they need to just figure it out. Like, this can't be a thing where come week 8, week 9, you have your game plan. Like, I think of 2023, the first game against Florida State, their scheme was not what they ended up doing at Ole Miss and later on in the schedule, right? Like, I asked Jaden Daniels after the Mississippi State game, yo, you guys were throwing it downfield a lot this game. Do you wish you would have done that week one? Like, he said, yeah, I wish you would have taken more shots and things like that. So your depth chart develops over the course of a season. Your scheme develops over the course of the season. The challenge, Carter, is that they have both of those things fine-tuned to the best of its ability, to the best of their ability, right off the rip. And it's got to be at a level that is inducive or conducive, I don't know, to winning a football game. Because you can't come out and limp your way through the first month of the season, especially not with everything that we're talking about this year and all the investments they've made. Like, there is absolutely no excuse for this team not to make the playoff with the roster they have, the coaching staff they have, all of it. So
give him a follow, John Eads. That's EADSWAFB on all social medias. John, and dude, you have joined an exclusive group, bro. You're part of the PHL 3-time guest club.
Ooh.
Dude, that's a tough.
I'm honored.
Because as many will attest, I'm very selective on who I want in here because I don't want to waste anybody's time. I get a lot of these comments from Brennan. I like this John guy. Good stuff.
Thanks, Brent. Appreciate it.
Well, Brennan, if you like him, go give him a follow on social media. 3-time guest club. Let's see, who else? Slade Roy's in a 3-time guest club.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
Slade's awesome. He's funny. Yeah. I'm excited to see if he can get a job in the NFL for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah.
And stuff.
Blake, Preston Guy, Van. Yeah. There's a few others in the 3-time guest club, but dude, this is bigger than the 5-time SNL host club. This is, you're green jacket will be in the mail pretty soon. So
go with my green shirt. I can't wear that on TV though. That'd be problematic.
Yeah, yeah, that would be
invisible. I like the chat you had with Daily. Your last
yes, Daily Joy. Yeah. It's funny thing. I honestly knew very little about her beforehand, but yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. And you're a lot of fun. Keep up the good work, man, and we'll have you on again soon, brother.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on. Always love chatting with
you. Make sure you go give him a follow. I don't have a gazillion followers, but on my platform, I want to support others who I think do good work, and I told him this beforehand. And speaking of my platform, I don't do this because it's hard enough as, you know, a solo creator, but I want to stop everything I'm doing and shout out to a guy that really makes my days so much better, in particular Mondays. It's my guy, Snow Like John. I finally got my Hold the Mayo shirt in the mail, and we got to get him on here. Even though he's more Saints than LSU, he loves LSU as well. Love Devin Stone. And Mayo Vision, his film guy. Check out his stuff. Red Beans and Rice Mondays are a life changer. I've been very fortunate to know him for 4, going on 5 years now. Freaking love him, man. I really, really, really do. I rarely recommend like non like sports content, but if you love New Orleans, that dude is going places. But there you go. Now, before we get to our next guest, he's coming in here pretty soon. You know, I want this to be clear. When I say I don't watch every pitch of every LSU baseball game, I think more people actually don't do that themselves, okay? And I do think it is so important to watch the games. That's why, you know, I'm having more people on here that do watch every pitch of every game. It's just hard for me. Like, it's really, really, really hard. I'm DJing almost every weekend in this portion of the year. And that's why I have people that do that. That does not mean I don't care. that does not mean I don't spend every day defending Beth Arena and LSU softball, and I don't keep up with everything. I try my best to. Okay. I did get a message recently. Hey, do you just not like watching baseball? It's not my favorite sport, but I played AAU baseball. I loved baseball. I did growing up. It just, like, I don't think people that actually watch every pitch of every baseball game for any team understand how much time you're spending doing that very thing. You know, I saw this a little bit earlier regarding the AJ Halsey stuff, okay? You know, this was On3 tweeting out a graphic about the 2026 LSU transfer class rankings. And we've seen a lot of, like, Austin Thomas pieces now out in the media. He gets a raise, a well-deserved raise. He doubled his salary, basically. And if we get to a college football playoff, he probably deserves more money because his job is that important. And I also want to shout out, Austin is the main guy overseeing all this stuff, but there are a lot of people behind the scenes at Bayou Traditions and staffers and so on and so on that put in a lot of work to put this together. But this is a good problem to have because you could tweet out a graphic like the one you're seeing on the screen and not include who I think the best transfer will be next year for LSU, which is Jack Pyburn. I really think Jack Pyburn's going to be that good. That's a good problem to have. Like, you could see this graphic: AJ Halsey, Tamarcus Cooley, Nick Anderson, Mansoor Delane, Jakeem Jackson, Patrick Payton, and Jamari Butler. There's a real chance that there's three different transfers who could have a better season than anybody on this graphic. In Pyburn, You can make a case for Bauer Sharpe, and you can make a strong case for Berrien Brown as well. And when I tweeted this out, it was like, there was a lot of people saying, hey, Carter, you think it's Berrien Brown? No, I think Jack Pyburn is going to be so freaking good. I think he's going to be surprisingly good next year. Crazy thing is the best one. Might not have made this graphic. That's why I did a snake and a burn. Pie burn. Okay. Get a Python burn. So I also wanted to share this as well. And I understand this isn't really your thing. For our next guest, this is more so his thing. The Met Gala happened last night. LSU had 5 different athletes at the Met Gala. Y'all, this is the most exclusive event you could be invited to. And Shakari Richardson, Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, Angel Reese, and Flaje Johnson. Obviously, that's Flaje and that's Angel. I just had it listed differently here. Oh, it's a big deal. It may not seem like it. That's a big deal. Okay. And then this weekend, someone who really didn't even play announced, you know, did the most historic thing you could do at the Kentucky Derby. It was Louis Dunn, you know, doing the start your engines. And it's not start your engines, but it's still horsepower. Get it? Horsepower. But you did that introduction for the Kentucky Derby this weekend. You should go to LSU because your social status is gonna rise. And we talk about it all the time. How many LSU women's basketball players that did not play really at all have 50,000 followers on social media, and in particular Instagram, where it's really hard to grow? Hard as hell. That's why you go to LSU. You better believe it, Jared. We're horsing around. Now, coming up next, is Jay Johnson losing his touch? My favorite LSU baseball personality will set it straight.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I gotta show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth experience serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. Big shout out to the BHL Patreon. Don't forget, here in a week, we're giving out an autographed Jamar Chase uniform. All you got to do is be signed up. And we just dropped our latest Garrett Nussmeier deep dive on deep completion percentage. So, Mr. Guest, Mr. AYS, Mr. 35,000 followers on Twitter with your infinite baseball wisdom, grade Jay Johnson's very controversial managering over the weekend in Texas A&M.
A.
Oh, you're going A.
Yeah, I mean, what are we complaining about? I mean, the only thing that I didn't that I disagreed with him on was going to Ashton Larson over Luis Hernandez, who just hit a bomb. I mean, that's the only thing that and listen, to his credit, I think that there are a couple of things that are happening right now from LSU people. What happened when he went matchup based? He won 8 out of the 9 matchup-based situations.
What does that mean for those that don't know?
Meaning that he went to lefties out of the bullpen versus massive left-handed hitters. As an example, he got Chase Laviolette and Caden Sorrell to strike out a couple of times in those matchups. He went to Zach Cowan, who was second in the SEC in ERA, and he gave up a home run, his first home run or second home run of the year. So here's what's happening right now. They see a loss at Texas A&M, and they're like, oh, my God, what are we doing? Jay Johnson sucks. You're a top five team, biatch. Like, what are you talking about? What are you complaining about? By the way, they'll be a top three team if they win 2 or 3 out of Arkansas this weekend. Like, what are we doing? I do think, and this is not a shot at our great guest, but Carter, our great fans out there, but I think some of them don't watch college baseball, and it's starting to show.
Okay. That's why I can't give him an A. The only thing I disagreed with was, like, I can have Barry Bonds on deck. I'm not taking someone out that hit a home run.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can make that argument for the Luis Hernandez situation. Here's the problem with what Jay would say in response to you. Hey, bud, 2 weeks ago, Ashton Larson came up and hit a bomb against Alabama, and you won the series.
But couldn't you just pinch hit him the next batter?
No, it's the third out. I mean, could you? Yes. I mean,
theoretically,
you could do anything. But here's the problem with the Luis Hernandez situation. You still gave up the bomb. You still gave up the home run. Like, I may not agree with what he did, but the fact of the matter is they still gave up the home run. This team still had offensive woes outside of what happened in that last inning. It comes down more to having critical hits in critical situations and critical, like, hey, man, nut up or shut up time than it does anything else. They're not executing when they need to execute. Not as often as they need to. Let me ask you, Carter, if Brian Kelly was a consistent top five person, what would we say about him?
Oh, he's good. I mean, he's
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they got to respond this weekend. Do they have to win this weekend? Yes. But I have faith that they can win this weekend.
So all I care about is a super regional, top eight national seed. That's the only thing.
They have to be a top 16 team. I mean, because the likelihood is that, like, last year you could have won the North Carolina regional or the Chapel Hill regional, and you would have hosted a super regional in Baton Rouge. If you would have beat them, you were a strike away. You would have hosted West Virginia in Baton Rouge. So, like, you can't go into baseball thinking that you won't host. Like, you can't do that, because anything and everything's going to happen. It's all about matchups at this point.
Right, but how close is LSU to locking in a top eight?
They win this weekend and they win next weekend, which South Carolina sucks. They're going to win 4 games, really.
Right, so if they win 4 of the next 6, that's close to locking in a top eight national seed.
Yep.
Okay. That's all I care about.
You can make the argument that they could lose one of the series and still get it.
Right. Obviously, depending on what happens.
In
the SEC. You know,
here's the thing, Carter, rudely interrupt you.
No. You're
Arkansas lost 3 of their last 4 series. Now, what people see is that Texas got swept by Arkansas. The problem in that, I love that shirt, by the way.
I saw you post it. I never just stop in especially outside of, like, the football space. Like, I shout out a bunch of other creators. Yeah, Snow Like John is, like, by far my favorite Louisiana content creator.
Oh, that's his shirt?
Oh, you didn't know? Yeah.
I swear to God, I didn't know.
Yeah. It was
okay, cool. Definitely support John. Yeah, I did not. I apologize to John. I didn't know.
No. He's probably enjoying it. He got 2 different mentions. And dude, he just makes me happy. Like, I hung out with him at the Super Bowl in Mayo Vision.
Great guy. Yeah, great guy.
Just great guy.
In reference to Arkansas, though, just to finish that thought. Texas, okay, their Friday night guy's out for the year with potentially Tommy John. They had the Big 12 player of the year, Max Ballou, that's out. So you can make the argument that two of their four most important players are out. To give context, that would be like LSU losing Cade Anderson and Derek Curiel.
Oh. Is Curiel the best player on this team?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably.
I would agree.
But that's the equivalent. Like, this kid's going to be a first-round draft pick, Ballou is. That's the part that you're trying to replace. So when they get swept by Arkansas on the road, which I'm not even getting into scheduling in the SEC, that's the first-ranked opponent they had in May. We started the season in February. I'm not going to get there. To your point with Chris Phillips on SEC Unfiltered, I go stupid on Greg Sankey tonight. But the bottom line is, what was the outrage about Arkansas and you playing them at home when they lost three of their last four series? Where was that at?
Yeah,
League is tough.
Yeah.
There's no other league in sports tougher than SEC baseball. It does not exist. It does not exist. There's not a sport in athletics tougher than SEC baseball. It does not exist. I promise you.
Well, ask Missouri.
That's a whole different beast.
Oh, man, for those that don't know, Missouri's not won an SEC game.
Yeah, you know, their coach is from Baton Rouge and was coaching at Southern 3-4 years ago.
I mean, I had no idea.
Eric Johnson, yeah.
Yeah. I do want to talk about baseball logic and rankings because we had a long 30-minute private discussion about
it. Mm-hmm.
Once again, this is me helicoptering in. I'm not Kendall Rogers, if you will, when it comes
Kendall to Rogers don't know either. So what do we do?
I just think out of all the sports, it's the dumbest to try and rank. It is the dumbest.
I mean, they're pretty much giving you projections. And they pretty much say that this is a projection because they don't have a choice because anything can happen on any given Sunday. The SEC beats the shit out of each other, Carter. It's very tough to win on the road. Very tough.
I just don't understand, though. I understand that like their record was way better than everybody else's. But how can you, as the premier baseball site, not penalize a team that a lot of neutral experts like yourself, I mean, you're not a Texas fan, is what I'm saying. You objectively said going into the series, this team might be fraudulent. You weren't the only one. It wasn't just you hot taking. There was a lot of people saying, well, things could go awry.
Not necessarily they're fraudulent. It's they're beat to shit. They're hurt. They're a wounded cow. Okay.
So Texas had a really banged up roster.
Okay. Yeah, they're very banged up. They're arguably one of the best rosters in the country, but they're banged up. I mean, like, again, this is how I would equate the rankings. It would be like everybody in the country at least being 10-2 and Ohio State lost to Michigan and them being 11-1 and you're trying to move somebody ahead of.
You agreed with Texas still being number one.
Yeah, because the justification would be who would you move ahead of them? See, some publications move Georgia. Well, they swept Georgia. Now, the thing is do you take the injuries into account? Well, when you're doing rankings, you can't. A ranking? Like, you're not projecting, right? A power ranking, power rankings, yes, you can project. But a ranking in reference to just ranking, how can you put Georgia ahead of Texas? They played on the field regardless of injury or not.
Okay. Like sure. Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, you are right. Yes.
Right? Like, right. So how do you do that? Do you put LSU there? Well, they lose 2-3 to A&M. Like, what do you do there in reference to a ranking? How do you penalize Texas? That would be my point. Doesn't mean that they're not fraudulent at the current moment in reference to what all is going on. But what it does mean is that you can't take that away from them. Carter, they got to lose 5 of their next 6 games to lose the regular season SEC title.
Okay, so you agree Because the way I was understanding was people like you, people like Chris Marler, people like whoever other LSU or just in general baseball.
I didn't see what Marler said. What did he say?
Well, he was basically saying, hey, this is the first time they've really gone on the road and played someone with the
ball. That is true. That is true. Well, listen, in January 30th, 2025, me and Chris Phillips did this, and I remember LSU fans started attacking me saying I was soft. Remember, like, I'm sure that everybody remembers that about the scheduling thing. They called me soft. My own people called me soft. Now y'all all bitching about the schedule? I'll pull the clip back up for you. I shared it.
Yeah, my thing is, and once again, this will be dated by the next weekend. It's just,
it'll be dated by tomorrow.
I mean, you got blown out in every game, every single game. But I didn't know they were
But Arkansas lost three of the last four series. So then, what you gonna say?
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, Arkansas wasn't in good form. And you get blown out by 5 runs in every game, and you don't fall in the rankings at all. And I was like, is Texas really that much better than everyone to stay at number one? According to you, they are. So I'll roll with that. You're
a right. Ranking, a ranking. Yes. Now, do I think Texas is going to lose some because they're beat up and they're going to fall some? Yes, I do.
I still get mad at that LSU lost that game to Texas. Yeah. I think about that game nonstop. I was like, turf field should be banned. I still blame it.
The University of Texas in all sports deserves to be banned.
Yeah, that's true.
By the way, AJ Halsey LSU just confirmed the Halsey signing. Which I don't know, man. Well, look, we'll see. Here's just the truth. It is tough to win on the road in this league. It is not making an excuse. Your bats have got to stop showing up. We'll talk about this tonight. So here's my four bullet points. Both of your starting pitchers on Friday and Saturday are top 5 in the country in strikeouts. Your offense in moments and times in a couple of games on Fridays and Saturdays the last 2 weekends is hitting below 200. You have no midweek game, so you're going to have to reset. The bottom line is you got to go out there and start hitting the ball. And I think that Jay's got to get on his team to start telling them their approaches off. Well, one play against the shift, I disagree with that. You gave up 10 runs. 10 runs ain't got nothing to do with the shift. You got rocked.
Yeah, dude, that game is still giving me scars. AJ Halsey. I said my piece on the Capital J journalism. I went off on your show last night, so I won't bring up that again.
But, oh boy, I got more DMs today about that than I've gotten in a hot minute, bud. People were calling his ass out.
Blame me. I forced.
Oh, I don't care who to blame. I mean, it's still stupid.
Come at me.
Still stupid by him. It was still stupid by him to do that.
I did, yeah. Basically, someone said he was something not true. But your thoughts on AJ Halsey and this team now?
So I'm going to talk about this tonight. So I'm not going to give you. I'm not going to give every fact of this, but I tweeted it, so I'll share it here. Carter, defensively, LSU has gained in a career of players 763 total tackles, 83 tackles for loss. Excuse me. They're adding 27.5 sacks and 16 interceptions. It's a lot of production.
Yeah.
That's a lot of production. Listen, man, man, you better be better. You better be better. There it is right there. Yep. So you're adding 763 tackles, 83 tackles for loss, 27.5 sacks, and 16 interceptions. Carter, think about that. You don't have 16 total interceptions in the last 4 years combined.
That's crazy. That is absolutely insane.
Very much insane. Mm. Carter, you don't have 27 and a half sacks in the last 4 years combined.
So I want to get to the LSU offensive line because, you know, we'll talk plenty about, you know, the LSU defense and how bullish we are on them. How do you feel about the current state, you being a former college offensive lineman of the LSU offensive line?
I don't know how to feel, Carter, at the current moment because I don't think we saw your starting five at all this spring, like not once.
Yeah.
I don't think that I can make a judgment on it right now. I think that there were a lot of times and situations where what makes me nervous about my take about the offense, I mean about the defense and what I saw from them up front. What makes me so nervous is because I thought your offensive line was absolutely awful, especially in the interior. And I'm not talking about DJ Chester. I thought DJ held his own for what it's worth. But with all due respect to Paul Mabinga, with all due respect to Bo Bordelon, with all due respect to Cohen Echols, they got their asses whooped. And I think when – and you did the spring film breakdown stuff, which was awesome. Go, everybody go over to Power Hour LSU and watch it. Well, look what happened at tackle. They got obliterated. So I look at a guy in week one like TJ Parker. See, like people haven't even thought about this. They just think that I'm being some asshole about LSU football. If you think that Patrick Payton and these guys can rush the passer, wait till you see TJ Parker. Carter, there's a projection out there that he might be the number one overall pick. So now you're going into a situation where your edge rushers dominated him. This per not Blake Ruffino's thoughts or my own opinion, I don't think he showed up in big games for what it's worth. So that's one thing that you could throw at TJ Parker. But the thing is you got other people out there that think he's the number one overall pick going into next year's draft. That's what they think of him. So now you look at this and say, I don't know what to make of the defense, especially up front, because I don't know if you saw your entire offensive line. You better put Josh Thompson at guard. You better. Because, golly. Brother, Sadir Mitchell whipped that ass. He whipped their ass. And the truth was, and you asked me this, and we talked about this off air, Don McKinley was getting in the mix of those things. And Bo Bordelon was taking him to the woodshed. So even the depth behind that, I don't know how 99 doesn't start at this current moment. I have no clue. So you, Carter, there's a couple of things this spring that I look at that offensive line and I say, look, man, you got a problem on your hands. And I don't think that the run game formations are helping them any. I told you that, you know, our team, or I say our team, but the people that helped me at AYS, they showed me how to clip videos. I don't know how to do that shit. Okay. A&M game was the game that I clipped the most. We have a tight end, or what we would call in the offense that we ran with what was pretty much Shannon Dawson's offense, by the way, who's the OC at Miami. He's got a tight end shaded to the right, off tackle. He has Kanan Durham does Nuss to his left. Nuss, so you have four defenders on this side of the football, okay? You have three on this one. You should be calling a what we call 34 dive, okay? Three being the running back, four being the four hole, okay? So 2, 4, 6, 8, right? In between the feet of the offensive lineman. They're opening up, and Nuss is zone reading a guy that's crashing down, and he gives the ball to Kanan Durham. Our offensive philosophy is also not helping out a very struggling offensive line. I clipped it.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're running play action off of that. Three plays later, Garrett would run something with a play action based off of that run. Okay. Did you know that the safety that walked down in the box when he saw Garrett open up, he bailed? He turns his back to Garrett and starts running because he knows that you're not – what are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah, I
would just, that's how I would clarify.
No, I really do think the LSU offense has a lot of things that are hard to fix, need to be fixed before the Clemson game. And
they're not getting fixed. They're not getting fixed. Like, are they getting fixed? Kane Durham better go off.
Yeah.
You know what I would do? You know what I would do if I'm Garrett? I would have called. I would have audibled.
Yeah. I mean, it's
– What is Joe Sloan going to do to Garrett when they're making the same level of money? What's he going to do to him? Is he going to cut him? Are they going to bench him? Garrett's got to understand that when he's got numbers, he's got to roll with the numbers. I'm sorry. Carter, that – we remember Burrow against Miami? Remember the game?
Yeah.
Remember how many times that Ed was asking that post game, hey, did you give Burrow the free to check? And he goes, listen, I mean, we didn't tell him, but we're not going to – if he's making the right decisions, we're not going to tell him to stop. Garrett's got to know that.
I like that you brought that up. I reference that Burrow game. I did this weekend talking about Nicholas Brissett and how many wide open lanes he had to run through.
Why did that happen? Because he checked when he had the numbers. That it's a numbers game. Carter, every offensive line coach you'll talk to in America, you know what they'll say? Get a hat on a hat and make the running back make the cut.
Yeah, and honestly, it's not – and this was brought to me. Is it Garrett's lack of ability to run? I mean, that's some of it, but the funnest – run game to watch in the SEC last year was arguably Texas, and Quinn Ewers. I could run faster than Quinn Ewers right now.
Well, and I can make the argument right now. Go to every game that they played against a ranked opponent. They did not clip over 100 yards.
Who, Texas in a rush?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At least they were good.
But who were they good against? Like, that would be my argument to you. Mississippi State, Carter, they couldn't clip 100 over Vandy. Georgia twice, they couldn't do it. Ohio State, they couldn't do it. Vandy, they couldn't do it. I think they barely did it against Arizona State, barely. So that's another ranked opponent. Carter, they did against ranked opponents, they averaged less than 100 yards rushing. They averaged less than 50, by the way.
But they still ran some. I mean, they still had good rushing games. They did it to that ferocious Florida front.
Carter, they had a four-string walk-on at quarterback. They had the ball for 30 minutes by the third quarter. Come on now.
I like watching their run game, though. I do. I was very impressed with it, considering both their best running backs were out. And I'm not the biggest Jaden Blue fan. Between the tackles, I think some of it was RB related, but nevertheless, they were able to run some with a pocket. I mean,
their best game was Clemson, where they ran for 300 net without the kneel downs. That's the thing that when we start talking Clemson, the last game we saw, Texas bent them over with three offensive linemen out, Kelvin Banks included.
But do you think Texas is overrated going into next year?
I don't think their front seven's overrated. I think they got the best defensive front seven in the country. The question is what does a first-year quarterback and Arch Manning look like? I mean, they're replacing a lot of receiver. They're replacing a lot of their offensive line. What does C.J. Baxter look like coming back? I mean, it's a lot of questions. I mean, you mean to tell me that Arch Manning could throw two picks against ULM, but you don't think he's going to go up to Ohio State and throw two picks?
Who's the best team in the SEC right now in your mind?
There isn't one.
Oh, it's got to be one.
No, there's not. It's a crapshoot. Name one. I can make an argument for and against a lot of teams.
But if you have to pick
one. It's not Texas. Texas has got to beat someone of relevance and take over something. Carter, the big games that they've been in, they've lost. 2 years ago, they lost to Oklahoma. You can give them the Bama game. Fine, give them the Bama game. But they lost to Oklahoma, and then they lost in the first round of the playoff. They come into an easy schedule this year. Okay, the biggest opponent that they have outside of Vandy is Hoomst. It's Georgia. And they got Patty smacked in both of them. And in the second half, a second-string quarterback came in there that Notre Dame shut down. Like, what are we talking about here?
If you had to put a – is LSU in your top three SEC hierarchy right now?
No, no.
All right, then who would those three teams be right now?
Georgia, Texas. Ooh, my fourth one would really piss people off, but I'm not going to say it.
It's Texas A&M. You could say it.
No, it's not A&M. Oh, I can't say it. I'd get obliterated.
Well, who's your third? Who's your third?
Texas, Georgia. Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know.
You're going to say Florida. I do. I know you're going to say Florida because you, dude, you will. Nobody loves your, their defensive line more than you. Nobody on the planet Earth.
They scare the shit out of me, but that's why I wouldn't want to put him there. They scare the shit out of me. I don't trust Billy Napier to save my life.
All right, so you got to give me a third. Are you going to put LSU there?
I'll put LSU at four. How about
look
that?
At you. Look, I mean, God, Doug, I have you on, and you give me this Omer Bullschneich.
Where would you put him? Who's your top four?
LSU. I think Texas is.
You better be careful. You better be careful with that. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. You better be careful.
Well, I think Colin Simmons is like kind of somewhat nationally flying under the radar. I mean, I think he could be like Will Anderson good. Or is that hyperbole? Or do you think that's?
I don't think that's hyperbole. I think he was worth $1 million that he asked for coming out.
Yeah, I mean, he was the best high school football player I saw. Like, I thought his high school film was better than Jeremiah
Smith. Here's one that I'd throw in there that people don't want to talk about. Ole Miss. What is Ole Miss?
Damn, dude. Ole Miss?
No, what is Ole Miss? That's a team that I'd throw in there and ask the question. That's what I said. Not in my top four. What are they?
Maybe seven at this point. I think Texas A&M's better than Ole Miss. Yay or nay?
I don't know.
I'm scared about my Vols, though, man. Tennessee.
Yeah, they
have welcomed me in with open arms, and I'm scared. Yeah. I'm scared about my Rocky Tops, man. Dude, that I tried. Tried to talk myself into Joey Aguilar. Tried. Just couldn't freaking do it.
Turns the ball over a lot.
Yes. In the red zone. Like, it was hard.
That's what she said.
Yeah, I did. I tried to beat you to it. That's why I freaking hate you. Oh, my God. I've done way too many segments with you. But yeah, man. Well, you go enjoy your show. Thanks for having me on last night. And,
thank you for having me on. You know that I will be. I will come on here as much as I can.
No, pause.
You got me.
I did one. I did one on the loudspeaker this weekend at the festival. It was a family friendly thing, and I almost said pause into the microphone. Like, it would have been perfectly fine if I just said, you know, but pause would have made it bad, you know. I would have blamed your ass for doing it. But
good. That's what she said, and a good pause. That's what I am.
All right, what's for dinner tonight?
I ate shrimp and boiled eggs.
Okay. Have a fun show, my brother.
You too, buddy. We'll talk soon, bud.
All right. We'll take a few more. The rare double guest interview. We're going to take all. It's tough to, you know, take questions when you have guests. So, Lagway's being slept on. So, you have Florida as that third team. Sam says, I think Florida is the second toughest game on our schedule. Sibley, you know Texas football better than anybody here, and that's perfectly fine. Tyler makes a good point. Musso's always welcome here. I think I messaged him recently to, like I said, part of my LSU baseball revelation, like I really do think it is very disingenuous to talk about something you don't actually watch, right? That's why, you know, I always preface this almost too much. I love LSU, but I say it all the time. But what really hit me like a ton of bricks was, you know, these national sports analysts that get caught up in talking too much sports, too many sports, that they clearly don't know anything about. And I'm not saying you have to know what a fire zone is. You do need to watch the games. I do think watching the games is the single most important thing when it comes to you talking about sports, right? Do you actually sit and watch the games? And then a lower level of that is, are you willing to watch a 13-minute YouTube highlight compilation of the game? Because that, even though it isn't as important as watching the actual game, that's at least you watching. Now, there's people that will, more than they would probably like to admit, that would jump on there and actually not watch the games. Okay. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you're busy. But I get it. Sloppy Top ain't hitting on nothing this year. I don't know, man. Dude, freaking, I mean, what the hell? Like, Joey Aguilar might just be ass. Like, they are in trouble. They're in trouble. And I love my Tennessee. I love my Tennessee supporters on Power Hour SEC. Freaking love them. I really do mean it. Taking LSU out of the equation, I think they have the best fans in the SEC. Now, obviously, I think LSU has the best fans in the SEC. But I really do think Tennessee fans are the most diehard in the SEC. But dear Lord, it could get ugly this year with what they have in their QB room. It honestly could. They have the worst QB room in the SEC. They do. Cliff says LSU is clearly the number three team in the SEC. Who's to say they're not number one? I'm serious. Like, if their offensive line isn't as question mark filled as one would think, you're in a lot of, you would probably have LSU as the number one team in the SEC going into next year. But it's a big issue. It is a big issue. Okay. And I wouldn't sound the alarm on it if I didn't have those same exact issues when it comes to the play caller. Y'all, it's a problem. It's a problem. I will also say this. Why do I harp on the play calling thing? Okay. Well, it has nothing to do with Joe Sloan himself. It honestly doesn't. Like I've said every time I've criticized Joe Sloan, it's hard not to like him. Like, he actually does put in work. There's a lot of coaches that don't work as hard as he does. When it comes to recruiting and self-introspection and all that stuff, it's just that in all sports, everything right now is just so SEC dominated. And to a somewhat similar extent with the Big Ten. Big Ten's really good, obviously, in football. But the SEC is just so heavily invested that, you know, I'm not SEC propagandist like others are, all right? Now, I would be probably if I worked for the SEC Network, which is a dream of mine at some point, which is to talk about sports nationally on ESPN or whatever. But, y'all, this is the most cliche phrase because it's become their motto. It really does just mean more as a whole. It just means more in the SEC. It just does. People care so damn much, all right? They just do. They are willing to let bygones be bygones if it meant you winning games, okay? I don't think people really understand how big of a risk it was Texas hiring Steve Sarkisian. There is a risk with that, knowing Sark's past. It was worth it. He's one of the best coaches in the country and arguably the best play caller in the country. Lane Kiffin is a risk. Heck, Arkansas brought back Bobby Petrino. All of it has paid off. It was worth it. And what do all three of those guys have in common? They're great play callers. It is so hard to call plays. So hard. On top of all the other shit you got to do, it is hard to call plays. Okay? So hard. A lot of it is experience. A lot of it is how you rep it in practice. And the biggest thing, and this is why actually watching games is important. The most underrated aspect about play calling isn't the play calling itself. It's the sequencing of it. All right? Yeah, I mean, dude, how you sequence, how you actually call the plays, in what order. All right? In many ways, it's a lot like telling a story. Writing a good script. There are great movies with great actors with great storylines. Sometimes it's just not sequenced correctly. So, George, let's go to LA Mom. Mom says, I felt worse for Tennessee in the Nico fiasco. I'm with you on that. Sibley has LSU number one in the SEC, followed by Georgia, Texas, and Florida. You know, it's interesting that your traditional powers, like the big three in the SEC right now, if most would say is Alabama, Texas, and Georgia. They have arguably three of the biggest question marks at quarterback. I mean, there is so much inexperience in those position rooms right now for those three schools. LSU's got the most, or one of the most, you know? Good point from Chance. You know what's really funny about, you know, Hugh Freeze is that they've actually done a pretty good job recruiting, you know, per the rankings and the portal. They got Lambert Smith out of the portal. I think people sleep on Cam Coleman. The problem is they missed on QB. And now they're rolling out Jackson Arnold. I don't know, dude. Let's go to Cole. It's a good question. I think fans are too hyped on Halsey. He ain't getting away with the he did in the SEC like he did in New Mexico or Houston. Okay. All right. Last thing. Once again, if you super chat, we'll keep it going. I am having dinner with my folks tonight. Is there maybe, for me included, us overrating Halsey to a certain extent? Yeah, I mean, there are some concerns with him coming in this late. Obviously, he's going to have to learn a new defense and all of that. But he is going to raise the floor of this defense. And if you listen to my initial AJ Halsey breakdown, I wanted to make it super crystal clear that I did not think he was an elite transfer in terms of like Caleb Downs being the absolute best case scenario. But I do think he will be productive. I do think he will be good. And, you know, he's not the fleetest of foot. He's not the biggest blazer, if you will, at that position. But he reads the game well. He plays decisively. And I just think with 3 years of starters experience, he's probably going to be a good player. Now, are there some other factors? Yeah, you know, you could have an Omar Spate situation where you're dominant in a different conference, you come over. But I do think Spates was dealing with a hip issue that bothered him that year and a very flawed defensive scheme, as many of you remember. But that was a different position and a different situation. I do think AJ Halsey will be a good player for LSU. I really do think so. So there you go. Great live stream. We will be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central. And I kind of want to give out, I know we're doing the Jamar Chase giveaway for patrons next week. I kind of want to give out a auto tomorrow of something. But I really do appreciate each and every one of you. Big thanks to our double guests tonight, John Eads and Blake Ruffino. We'll talk to you soon. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. All right. We get a super. We're not done. Sibley wants to keep it rolling. Sibley said, F your family dinner. It's okay. My parents are watching right now, too. Do you think the media is hesitant to rank LSU high because of our performance in opening games? Yes. Yes. No doubt about it. The difference is, do I think that plays a factor? Yeah, I do. But for the most part, the media is really high on LSU. You know, I've spoken my piece about the expert that they have at On3. Why am I drawing a blank? I'm serious. I'm drawing a blank on him. And his stuff pops in my feed all the time. Looks like Johnny Bravo. He had LSU number 7 on his preseason top 25 list, which would obviously be a playoff team. There's a lot of media that has LSU in the playoff. A lot. And these are neutral observers. JD Pickle, that's his name. Okay. And by the way, it's not an insult. I wish I looked like Johnny Bravo. That dude is a beast. Okay. But I do think I do think that's going to float in the media's mind. Hey, I think they're really good, but I don't think they are good enough to go on the road to beat Clemson at Clemson and then survive an SEC season where they essentially would have to go 11-1 to get in. You know, 3-loss teams were really on the outside looking in. Could a 3-loss team get in next year? Sure. But you know, that's why that Clemson game is just so important, because now you can make – it used to be the opposite. It used to be – in just the four-team playoff, it wasn't as important to win that difficult non-conference game because it didn't count against your SEC record, and you would pretty much need to get in the SEC championship game to get into the playoff, all right? But now it's the opposite because if you lose that opening game, you really need to go 11-1 the rest of the way. Then you have to play the meaningless conference championship game. Even if you lose that, they'll probably still put you in, but still, that's an extra game that you have to play. And then you have to play three playoff games after that. So more than likely, you really, really, really need to win that Clemson game. Based on, and look, the playoffs going to get wacky. There's going to be some years where some of that applies and some where it doesn't. But there you go. Jordan, Wolves on the hunt. This kind of goes along with, I wish we had Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards would be a beast. All right. The Supers are flying in. Y'all don't want the live stream to end. That's fine with me. Let's go to the Super and we'll get back to Chance. Sam says Clemson is overrated. We just have to prove that. Man, I just don't think so, man. I just don't think so. I do think they're a very good team. I think Club is a good QB. I think their receivers are good. Obviously, that defensive line with Parker and Woods are good. I don't think they're overrated. And here's the thing, Sam. Even if they are, home field in a season opening game, we're talking about a true home field advantage in a season opening game. We've not really faced that in a season opening game of these that we've lost. So in 2020, we were at home, lost, obviously, no fans. 2021, LSU versus UCLA, they don't really have fans, okay? 2022, neutral site game in New Orleans. 2023, neutral side game in Orlando. Obviously, one crowd tilted towards LSU and the other tilted towards Florida State. But LSU had a lot of fans in Orlando. It's not really the same. And then, of course, USC and Vegas, it was pretty even. Slight lean towards USC, but I was there, and it was not a home field advantage for USC. I really didn't think so, but whatever. Now you have a true road game. True road game. And that's going to help Clemson so freaking much. It really is. All right. So, yeah, I mean, I really do think Clemson's good. And it's going to be a tough game to win. I will say this, though. The actual LSU players themselves are very confident. A father of a prominent player has texted me nonstop about how confident this group is and how confident or how well they're gelling together, all right, to the point where there are some guys that don't play for LSU anymore from last year's team that know some of the transfers that are in. This group is tight. That has been told to me repeatedly. Now, I'm skeptical of that because, you know, it's very transactional and there's, you know, so much movement. But, man, you kind of just start believing those things when they're told to you repeatedly, like they have been to me. Tougher to play Clemson, South Carolina, or the Swamp. Swamp's the craziest road environment I've ever been to. Ever. Never going back. They are overpaid, supply and demand. Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, I said what I said yesterday on Blake's show. It's okay. You know, y'all have got to. I know I've done this lecture before. I'm not a big wig. I'm not some big journalist, but I do have a journalism degree. I'm not even a journalist, but I do have, once again, I do have a journalism degree. Y'all, college football stories being broken. The big stories are going to come from the national big reporters. It's just how it works. Okay. It's so hard to get big scoops. All right. You really got to be plugged in with the agents. And it's just it. Okay. Now, are stories broken from non-agent entities? Yeah, often so. But a good chunk of the time, it's the agents. So, you know, when you read Hall sees the most expensive transfer, that's not what I was told. It's just not. And also, I didn't really get into doing this for that, you know, like I got into this to talk about football, not necessarily how much this player gets here or there. I would find it a little bit more interesting if there was a hard cap, because if there was a hard cap, well, the money is inversely related or directly related to who you are as a player. But because there is no hard cap, you can move some things around and make things work. Obviously, you don't have an infinite amount of money. But, you know, Halsey got taken care of. It wasn't what was being posted on Miami message boards or whatever. Okay. Yeah, McShay is really high on Clemson. I saw that. No. Hugh Freeze having health issues? Yes. He does have some. AP, let's talk about the Michigan situation. It is farcical that you can self-suspend yourself but not do it for the most immediate games. You know, what's fascinating to me is, you know, Michigan can't fire Sharon Moore now. You know, he just signed him. But look, that whole ordeal is just strange. From him not really there before the season, there was some cloudiness over if he signed his contract or not. Then you get to hear. But here's what Sharon Moore would say. Hey, we signed the highest ranked recruit ever coming out of the state of Michigan. And in my last two games, I beat the two best programs, arguably, of the past couple of decades, Ohio State and Alabama. And I beat them away from the big house. But man, dude, I don't know. I think Michigan has a chance to be terrible next year. Like, bottom out terrible. Lost three essentially first round draft picks off their defense. Weird quarterback situation. Both their running backs out. Now, how good were those running backs? That's up for debate. I don't know if they have the juice at receiver. You lose Colston Loveland, the best player on your team, arguably, or the best player on your offense. I don't know. All right, we'll take a few more here. I didn't think we'd be going the song after. And my mom said she would love it if Michigan was terrible. Miami paid Carson Beck $4 million. And Carson Beck, dude's had himself an offseason, if you will. Fumbling a Cavender twin. Crazy. Crazy. Yeah, I don't know what's next for Michigan. I really don't. I really, really, really don't. Ward Manuel, yeah. And so he says he knows how to cook gumbo. And I like Ward Manuel. It's just that is a weird athletic department to manage. The maize in blue. Let's see. I want to make sure I get a few more. Shrimp and boiled eggs, special kind of farts. Yeah, I would hate to be Miss Ruffino tonight. But then again, they have two young kids, so. If you have two youngins, you're probably used to dealing with some farts. Let's go to Cliff. What happens to Blake Baker if the defense is terrible next year? It's a very good question. You're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble if they're terrible next year. Now, they won't be because if you spend this much money and get these many transfers, it's just not going to happen. It would take a lot for this defense to be terrible. A lot. Now, is it possible? Yeah, it's possible. This is not a gazillion percent certain thing that they're going to be good on that side of the football. But I feel pretty confident they're going to be good. But if they're not, there's a lot of money on that side of the football that has been spent on coaches, and it would be very frustrating. It would be. They're just not going to be terrible. The one thing I would say, though, if Blake Baker were to ask my very novice but somewhat astute opinion, the single thing that I would ask myself is what can I do to lower the rush yards before contact number? All right. So basically, actually, I'm going to save this for tomorrow. Yeah, I'll give you a little tease.
Let me make sure I write it down. All right. There you go. This will be the topic for tomorrow's show. RYBC. Okay. Big thanks again to our friends at the XYAN Imaging 360 Spin Booth Experience. And please go sign up for Fast Draft Fantasy. Promo code Carter for a deposit match bonus up to $50. Fast Draft Fantasy. We'll talk to you soon. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tonight we are doing tacos. Thanks to our top super chatters, Mr. Sibley, Mr. Sam. Let's go.